From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on September 3rd, 1944, in Abbeville, Alabama. A woman named Recy Taylor was walking home from church, 24 years old, heading home to a husband and a young child. Recy was an African-American woman, and a car rolled up. Inside were seven white men. One of them pointed a gun at her, told her to get in. Taylor was terrified, and she went with the men. They drove her to a patch of trees and stopped the car on the side of a dirt road. One of the men told Taylor to take her clothes off. She remembers him saying, quote, "Get them rags off, or I'll kill you and leave you down here in the woods," end quote. Six of the seven men raped her. Recy Taylor survived that rape, and in fact, she would outlive all of her assailants. She passed away just a few months ago at the age of 97. And Recy Taylor knew she was hardly alone. In the Jim Crow South, white men often attacked young black women, but most women didn't come forward. They knew that they didn't have much of a chance in a court of law, and they further feared for their safety. Recy Taylor refused to stay silent. Her efforts to find justice helped spark a civil rights era, led to organizing in the African-American community on a wider scale than just her individual case. Now, you might not be surprised to hear that two grand juries declined to indict the assailants, and no charges were ever brought. But in 2011, the state of Alabama finally issued a formal apology for its failure to prosecute her attackers. So why don't we all know Recy Taylor's name? It was invoked at the Golden Globes by Oprah Winfrey, and now you can see the full story in a documentary film. It's called The Rape of Recy Taylor, and it's showing at the Little Theater next Friday, March 23rd, part of the Black Cinema series. Here to talk about it are my guests for the hour, and three of our guests here from RABJ, the Rochester Association of Black Journalists. Kevin Hicks is the Vice President for Print for RABJ and a journalist himself. Kevin, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Allison O'Malley is here. She's Chief Executive Officer for Resolve. Great to have you back here. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And from RABJ, our colleague, Moet James. Great to see you in the studio here, Moet. Moet is Development Administrative Assistant for WXXI and co-coordinator for the Black Cinema series for RABJ. Nice to have you here in the studio.
Thanks for having me.
And Erica Wilson is here. Erica is a producer for WHEC-TV and also co-coordinator for the Black Cinema series. Erica, welcome to you as well.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Coming up here is a film that is a powerful, roughly hour and a half documentary film that tells this story. But again, if that name is still fresh in your mind, let's listen to where most of us heard the name Recy Taylor for the first time. This is Oprah Winfrey at the Golden Globes.
And there's someone else, Recy Taylor, a name I know and I think you should know too. In 1944, Recy Taylor was a young wife and a mother. She was just walking home from a church service she'd attended in Abbeville, Alabama, when she was abducted by six armed white men, raped and left blindfolded by the side of the road, coming home from church. They threatened to kill her if she ever told anyone. But her story was reported to the NAACP, where a young worker by the name of Rosa Parks became the lead investigator on her case. And together, they sought justice. But justice wasn't an option in the era of Jim Crow. The men who tried to destroy her were never persecuted. Recy Taylor died 10 days ago, just shy of her 98th birthday. She lived, as we all have lived, too many years in a culture broken by brutally powerful men. For too long, women have not been heard or believed if they dared to speak their truth to the power of those men. But their time is up.
That's Oprah Winfrey at the Golden Globes, and Recy Taylor's story is told in The Rape of Recy Taylor. Next Friday, I'm going to ask Moet and Erica to tell us a little bit about what's coming up 10 days from now. Moet?
Thank you. So in 10 days from now, we will be screening The Rape of Recy Taylor at the Little Theater. It's a part of the Black Cinema Series, which is a partnership with the Rochester Association of Black Journalists and The Little. Each month, we show a film that we cultivate and figure out and really bring together a panel to discuss what's going on in the film and how it relates to what's going on today. So next week, it's a little bit special because we wanted to tie it to Women's History Month, mm-hmm. which is mainly why we chose the film. Also to talk about, you know, the Me Too movement and a lot of other things that are going on currently. And we are also going to host a donation drive for our local Rape Crisis Center, Restore, to collect donations for these women here that need our help.
All right. So I want to ask Erica, you know, I hadn't heard the name Recy Taylor, and I feel like I'm a little embarrassed about that. But what are your hopes for this film? Are you hoping that a lot of people will now have this chance, that this window into her life is back open now, and that we can understand what happened here? What do you hope comes out of showing this film?
Great question. I think that it'll definitely bring a light to, an even brighter light to what it is that's going on today. I appreciate Recy's boldness and her courage to immediately come out about what it was that happened to her, being raped. And she was in the sheriff's office that same night after making it back home, you know, trying to explain what it is that happened to her and trying to get justice for what it was and never actually seeing that justice. So I'm hoping that this film can encourage some women to become not comfortable with what it is that they've been through, but to understand that they're not alone and that if they need to tell the story, then that's what they should do.
Can I ask Kevin Hicks, had you heard of Recy Taylor? Of course you have.
I mean, I had heard because being in the print media, one of the things that has that I've got to mention is that the black press was very vocal about this. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you hadn't heard about it, but that was the majority press had ignored it. So the black press, just like with the killing of the murder of Emmett Till, yeah. was mm-hmm. totally on this. Mm-hmm. So that was part of my education about as a journalist.
Is there a powerful moment happening now where so many of us are catching up a little bit and understanding our own history better? Do you see change happening, if slowly, Kevin?
Slowly. I mean, it took a lot for this filmmaker to come out with this. There's also a book that is called at the End of the of a Dark Street, and that talks about black women and the history of rape. I mean, you know, you have to contextualize this in just going all the way back to slavery. And just how not only black women at that time, but in, you know, you look at the antebellum South, the wives of the plantation owners, they were also constricted too. I mean, the women were property. Mm-hmm. And that's what, you know, this whole rape culture, which continues today, grew out of. Mm-hmm.
There are moments in the film where the filmmaker interviews a number of people, Recy Taylor's family members who have survived over the years, many of the people who have been involved not only with that case but also covering this, the woman who wrote the book at the end of a Dark Street, mm-hmm. that Kevin is referring to. And, you know, Kevin, you go back to slavery, you go back to those roots, and this film explores just the very theme that in the Jim Crow South, a lot of white men thought there's a rite of passage to sort of preying upon black women, that black women were either a possession or something to possess, to ridicule in many different ways, to assault in this case, mm-hmm. that was much more common than I think we realize.
Huh? Yeah, I mean, you take a look at Gunnar Myrdal's you know, seminal study, The American Dilemma, and he talks about that relationship between race and sex in this country. And, you know, one of the things also that about the whole Recy Taylor case is the effect that had on her marriage. I mean, there was a dissolution of a marriage there, and you cannot discount that had an effect. So he died in the early 60s. And, you know, as black men, that's very hard, the whole emasculation of black men in this society, to, you know, stand by and be powerless with a society that rapes your women.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Allison O'Malley, Recy Taylor's story is powerful from so many different angles, not least of which is the fact that she came forward at a time where, you know, understandably, black women weren't telling their stories because who was listening? Mm-hmm. We're still in a society where it's sometimes hard to get listened to. Mm-hmm. How much do you admire just, can you even sort of process 1940s Jim Crow South and she's still willing to go out and tell her story, putting her own self at risk, putting her family at risk, probably putting her children at risk?
She's extraordinary. And I was really blown away at her courage. And not having, you know, I'm a white woman, so thinking about just how do you contextualize this story and think about what we have to do better. And what's so shocking is how much has not changed in reality, and it's appalling. You know, the stories that are beginning to break through, that we're starting to hear more and more, the conversations that are being had, that are finally being had, are so important. And throughout the film, especially in the earlier parts of the film, they talked about black women not having autonomy over their bodies. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in large part in society, there's still that challenge for women. And even more so for African American women. Mm-hmm. So it's not okay. And I think this film is a startling look at what we still wrestle with today, which comes from the legacy of women being property, that still exists in our culture.
What do you hope comes out of this film then? The showing of this film as part of the series?
I think it's really important for people to see the film and to have. I'm thrilled that you're having a panel, that you want to engage people in conversation instead of just having people leave the film without an opportunity to process and digest it. There's so much there. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And having watched it alone, I'm curious to see it in the context of a crowd and feel the response and the energy. I think it's a hard thing to actually watch alone and to process. So this is a good exercise, and it's an important exercise for all people.
The film is The Rape of Recy Taylor. You can see it next Friday, followed by a panel discussion at the Little Theater, the Rochester Association of Black Journalists, and the Black Cinema Series putting on the film. And I would echo so much of what our guests have been saying. I had a chance to watch it last night, and it is a powerful film. It tells a story, again, that so many people, and let's just be blunt, so many white Americans don't know. Mm-hmm. And that
that's
is,
true.
You know, that's just the reality, and that is starting to change. Erica, was it difficult to watch? I mean, I thought the film not only sort of reenacted parts or kind of used some cinematography to kind of put you in that moment, mm-hmm. but then also the fact that Recy Taylor lived to 97 and there are times you can hear her voice and mm-hmm. her family, just seeing the raw emotion. Was it difficult for you?
It wasn't difficult. It's something that I've known to be the reality for black women for so long. I mean, going back to slavery, the black woman was looked at as a possession, like we said. You know, she was looked at as property and what wasn't treated as human. And I think about how, you know, I'm thinking about how the importance of showing this film today. So a lot of people may just think this started with the Me Too movement and that is just now starting now and this is the perfect time. And it goes back as far as, you know, the Jim Crow era where this was happening, or even back to slavery, where the black woman was taken away from the family. Even black men were taken away from the family as well. You know, black men and men deal with rape as well. But it's just, it wasn't difficult because I know that it's something, it's a part of my history, something that my ancestors have dealt with. And I'm looking forward to seeing how people are reacting to it today and understanding that this happened way before, you know, the Me Too movement, but it all somehow comes together.
Listeners, if you want to look up the film, Recy is spelled R-E-C-Y. The Rape of Recy Taylor is the film. There's a website for the film. You can check out the trailer and certainly go to thelittle.org and learn more about what's coming up next Friday. And, you know, to Erica's point about this being, you know, really part of, you know, the early roots of the Me Too movement, I wonder what would have happened had one of the two grand juries chosen to indict. Because here's this woman, 24 years old, mm-hmm. gang-raped by six white men, willing to come forward to tell her story, but two different grand juries chose not to indict. No charges were brought. Nothing ever happened.
Right.
I mean, 2011, mm-hmm. you got sort of a hollow state apology all these years. We'll talk about that in a moment because mm-hmm. the film covers that too. And I think that there is something pretty disingenuous about that. But I wonder, Erica, if she had been successful at all in trying to get justice, mm-hmm. that maybe that would have been a Me Too movement that other women would have said, wait, Recy Taylor came forward. Mm-hmm. And those guys are going to jail at least. Mm-hmm. That those men are off the street and that we feel a little bit safer. I can tell my story. But instead what they saw was just another black woman mm-hmm. with no justice, no convictions, no charges. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that snuffed out even more hope that people might have had. Because of the justice system, there was no justice.
Right. Mm-hmm. I definitely think that, I mean, and like Kevin mentioned earlier, it was all about, you know, how the press covered it as well. It was the black press that mostly did it. So majority of the people or, you know, white people weren't aware of what was going on or didn't believe what was going on. I don't really know what that was, but I think about how a lot of people wasn't aware of who Recy Taylor was until Oprah mentioned her. And you can even hear after Oprah mentions Recy's name, maybe like five people in the audience like clapped. And it was like silent. Like people wanted to know like, who is this? Or what is this? Like, what's the story? So, yeah, I don't know if it would have been like a Me Too movement, but maybe more women, more black women would have been. I don't know. No, mm-mm. I don't think so. Mm-mm. Yeah, I don't know.
There were so many forces. I'm sorry. There were so mm-hmm. many forces at work. And just her courage in coming forward was, it's really staggering. And the odds, even with all of the support she had from the NAACP mm-hmm. and other organizations, the odds of anything actually going in her favor were zero from the gate. But she still fought. Such extraordinary courage.
And that's why maybe Moet was looking at us saying, unfortunately, this wouldn't have been a Me Too movement because the American justice system wasn't there.
Nope. The American justice system wasn't there for the people of color. They weren't there to work for the people of color. This is the 40s. This is Alabama. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, my mother's family is from Alabama, specifically from Montgomery, Alabama. So really and truly, I mean, things worked as Jim Crow laws. No one saw there being an equalizer for us. They didn't feel that their voice was needed to be heard. They knew they were only seen, not heard. That's it. To be completely honest, you know, Rosa, which her intention was to gain light on this situation. She was trying to get the bigger press to hear this story mm-hmm. For the people that were marginalized, especially in a small town as Abbeville, mm-hmm. That's not part of a larger city. So it was much harder for people in, you know, the back country rather than someone in the main cities that has the connections to NAACP mm-hmm. or their local churches. These are people who really can rely on themselves because they didn't have a community around them. They were from smaller towns. Mm-hmm. They weren't connected to corporations or police stations or things of that such.
Mm-hmm. And then if you just look a decade before, you had the case of the Scottsboro Boys, which, you know, that did gain some measure of notoriety in the white press. But one of the things that flipped that is you had 9 black men mm-hmm. falsely accused of raping a white woman. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they, despite the efforts of the NAACP, I mean, they were, you know, they were in jail for a long time. And it wasn't until, you know, years later that you had some presidential recognition of, you know, what was wrong. So, again, that goes back to that dynamic of race and sex in America.
We're talking about the rape of Recy Taylor and the related themes. The film is a documentary that will be shown next Friday, 10 days from now. That's the 23rd at the Little Theater. What time, James? What time is the film?
7:00.
7:00. And then the film's about an hour and a half, and there's panel discussion that will follow. Couldn't agree more with our panelists talking about, you know, just what an experience that is going to be to be able to see the film in a room of people who might be hearing and seeing Reese's story for the first time, and the emotional punch that the film brings here. It is powerful. Later this hour, we're going to talk about a number of things. There's a Rosa Parks connection. There's this, mm-hmm. Kevin Hicks, there's this thing that, white people like me grow up thinking Rosa Parks was this random woman who showed up and said, mm-hmm. I'm not going to sit in the back of the bus. Mm-hmm. Well, she had a career, and mm-hmm. she you know, carefully worked with others to decide who's going to be the one to kind of go to the front of the bus, and she deserves all of the accolades. But she's much more interesting and storied in her career than just one woman who decided one day I'm going to sit at the front of the bus.
Yeah, I think it comes from just the sanitizing of history. I mean, they call her, which I understand she wasn't really too keen on this being called the mother of the civil rights movement. And I think, again, it's, you know, the white press kind of putting her in a box that one mm-hmm. day she just stood up. Well, there was a lot behind that mm-hmm. standing up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you go into the whole history of her, I mean, she wasn't the first black woman that had resisted the segregation on the bus. It was a teenager that had stood up. But the problem was, she was a teenager. You're at that stage that you're not, you know, believed. But when it came to Rosa Parks, I mean, she had the credentials, the workings behind the civil rights movement, upstanding church member. Mm-hmm. But now it just her backstory is getting told.
Mm-hmm. Rosa Parks ends up being a person who shows up in this film because she ends up going to work advocating on behalf of Reese Taylor, who, again, if you're just joining us, raped by six white men in 1944 in a brutal gang rape by the side of the road, threatened with death, goes to tell her story. By the way, she was left blindfolded and told she would die if she ever told anybody, but she told. Mm-hmm. It just never went anywhere. Two grand juries chose not to indict. And we've just been told by the production company that we can play a couple of clips from this film. So we're going to have a chance to do that in a moment here. The film is going to be showing The Rape of Reese Taylor next Friday at the Little Theater at 7 p.m. It's a name that was invoked by Oprah Winfrey, but it's a name that black filmmakers and black journalists have been writing about and telling about for decades now. And many of us are finally catching up a little bit here. The film uses footage from so-called race films throughout history, and they can be difficult to watch. I want to listen to a clip of the film with a scholar featured in the film talking about these kinds of films and what they meant.
Race films taking on white supremacy is very similar to the black press. You have Oscar Micheaux's Within Our Gates targeting lynching and sexual assault. It plays with both the lynching of a family, a black woman and a black man, and also the sexual assault of a biracial woman who actually turns out to be the daughter of the man who's trying to rape her. Race films made for black audiences were popular because they got to see a diversity of black characters who's not the Sambo or the Jezebel. Black people felt like it was more authentic, even if it was fictional. They wanted to see that without the white gaze.
Kevin Hicks, that's kind of what you're talking about there. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more about what you think the impact in history now is on black films or so-called race films.
Well, I mean, they were definitely, I mean, the race films were at a time when you had blacks that were excluded from mainstream Hollywood. So you had people like Oscar Micheaux and other black directors who also answered to some of the one of the most potent films of the time, Birth of a Nation. So when that came out in 1915, you know, here you have a president, Woodrow Wilson, that's sanctioning a film that shows a white man in blackface attempting to rape a white woman. Now, to counter that, how can you counter that when you have all these theaters across the country showing something like that? Oscar Micheaux did a film, which the name escapes me right now, but he did you know, his version of, you know, what really would happen, where you had the Ku Klux Klan coming in and raping black women. So when you look at the race films, which I'm sure during our the course of our we've only done this for one year, mm-hmm. But I'm sure we'll be taking a look at race films and their impact in bringing their part of the legacy that led up to a couple Sundays ago with Jordan Peele getting the best original screenplay for Get Out. Get so,
we talked about it on this program last week, and Get Out should have won Best Picture.
Should have definitely, hands down.
Right, yeah.
It's an amazing film, and Jordan Peele is a genius. Moet and Erica, do you agree? Are we moving in a direction where there is at least a little bit more parity, openness, where doors are opening at all?
Most definitely. Definitely. And it's not just because people are curious. It's because people in Hollywood are making it happen for those who are trying to become part of that culture. So, like filmmakers like Ava DuVernay, she owns her own company where she's trying to get more women to get involved in the film society so that it opens doors for them to create their own films to be shown across the country and to be honored and to be recognized. So, I definitely think things like Black Panther are opening so many doors for conversation.
I agree. I mean, like you even mentioned, you know, that a lot of white people are just now hearing about Recy Taylor. So I think what we're trying to do with Black Cinema Series is to showcase these films so it won't be years and years and years later that people are being exposed to what it is that are happening, I mean, in the Black Cinema Series and then the Black lives that are being portrayed in these films. So I definitely think that we're moving in a direction of doing more educating through the films that we're trying to showcase.
Absolutely.
Especially with the selection of people that are going to be serving on the panels after the films. So come out, you know. We want to bring the community out, and we want to educate. That's the thing.
Fill the Little Theater next Friday. Get tickets in advance.
Yeah.
Sell it out. It's next Friday night, 7 p.m., The Rape of Recy Taylor, followed by a discussion. It's part of the Black Cinema Series. If you go to thelittle.org, you can see more about this film and about the series itself. We're late for our only break, and when we come back, we're going to hear another clip from the film. Frankly, it was a clip that was chilling and infuriating to me, but I want to play it because, again, I want to demonstrate just this ongoing viewpoint that the clip's going to speak for itself. I'm going to get too fired up. Let's do that after this only break of the hour, and we'll come back and continue the conversation with our guests right here on Connections. And let me tell you also what's coming up tomorrow on this program. Some of the leaders of New York State United Teachers are going to be in Rochester tomorrow. Nice, its president will be here and their executive vice president. And they're going to sit down with us. We're going to talk about everything from state testing, school safety, of course, an important subject, and a very important case at the Supreme Court, the Janus versus AFSCME case that is about right to work. That and a lot more coming up tomorrow on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. It wasn't that long ago down in Alabama where Roy Moore ran for U.S. Senate. Judge Moore lost. And if you spend any time on social media, you've eventually came across a hashtag, Thank Black Women. Mm-hmm. And this is a time where there is at least a little bit more understanding of the strength and the power of black women. And there's a section in this film, The Rape of Recy Taylor, towards the end of the film that I really appreciated, that showed the strength and the power of black women, the fact that they are always there at movements for justice, for rights, solidarity, for the work that's been going on. Look at the video. They are there. They are part of the community, but they are so often not recognized. There's a really powerful moment late in the film where they give you this montage, and it just hits you with that. And then you can't help but think of what happened in Alabama. Again, I'm not taking a political side there. I'm just saying that, you know, for those who sort of observe elections and there's a Chris Thompson who was on this program talking about Get Out last week, was making the same point. Thank black women. Support black women.
Yes.
This film makes that point very strongly at the end. And you think about Recy Taylor and who supported and didn't support her. Well, contrast that with what Larry Smith had to say, a local Alabama historian who is in the film. This is a clip from the film of Larry Smith, the historian, talking about 2011. State of Alabama finally issues an apology for failing to prosecute the six white men who gang-raped Recy Taylor. Listen to the language that he uses. Listen to how he describes this. This is what he says in the film.
A book came out that told about the Recy Taylor situation. A young black lady was allegedly raped by six or seven young white boys. It incited some people in the northern area of the country. They began giving some local people here some heavy harassment. There was conflict and testimony in that situation. I don't know rightly or wrongly. I'm not here to judge, but I'm just a historian. But not professionally trained, I might add. Finally, our local representative in the legislature decided to maybe, you know, help both sides of the situation calm down. He had an act introduced in the Alabama legislature officially giving Recy Taylor an apology.
Should we go through everything that I just scribbled down? Mm-hmm. First of all, this historian describes the gang rape of Recy Taylor as a situation. Mm-hmm. Situation. That he says there were some things that allegedly happened. Now, there is plenty of historical evidence here.
Mm-hmm. Including the six men describing what they did.
Yes.
Describing it.
Yeah, this is not one of those cases where you're going, well, man, I really hope people aren't, you know, pinning false accusations. But he says allegedly happened. And you know who got fired up? The North. Some people up in the North got upset about this case, and they started, quote, harassing local people in Alabama about it. You know, wouldn't leave them alone about this gang rape of a black woman. Now, he says, I'm not here to judge. And I was appreciative of the fact that he clarified that he's not a professional historian. He just gets paid as one. And he says the apology was issued. And this is the part that was the most damning to me. To calm down both sides. How many times on this program have we heard black women tell us what it is like to be portrayed as the, quote, angry black woman? Mm-hmm. Well, here is Larry Smith, Alabama historian, saying they got this apology to calm them down. And I couldn't help but feel that and feel just angry about that. Erica Wilson, what did you make listening to his words there?
I thought, it was too late. I mean, especially his place in the film, it was just like, really, dude? Like, we already know, like, what the truth is. Like, we know what's going on. Like it's no point of you even playing it or wording it the way that you're wording it. Like, it's no point. I think about how black women have not only been raped by, you know, just like their slave owners, but black women have been raped by all kind of people. I mean, it happens in the police system. You know, police have been accused of raping women, black women. Even doctor, it goes to the point where it's doctors who are performing, you know, these kind of misconduct. You know, it's hard to be looked at as, I mean, every day I try not to come off as an angry black woman. And I have no reason to be angry because I understand that is just something that we have to deal with. People not understanding who we are or what it is that we face, and that the things that our ancestors have gone through still affects us today. And a lot of people don't understand that, and a lot of white people don't understand that. And I just say that to say that we're going to use Black Cinema Series as another way to educate people. Not a lot of black people are, you know, aware of the true history of what it is that white people go through, and white people aren't really aware of what it is that black people have gone through and are going through. So, yeah.
Watching that film, I remember thinking, I don't know why they're putting this guy in there. And then I thought, I think I know what the filmmakers are doing. I think they want us to see that in 2018, we can see this film and feel a certain way. Mm-hmm. But there is at least some segment of the population. I don't know just how fully representative Larry Smith is of Alabama or whatever. I'm going to try not to overgeneralize. But clearly, there is an element of the population that thinks, well, you got your apology. Mm-hmm. Calm down. You know, we don't really know what happened. They were just allegations. You know, the Northerners were upset. That was not the quote from 1951 or 1945 or 1982. Mm-hmm. That's now. Mm-hmm. And I thought that that inclusion in the film, in retrospect, actually is powerful because it reminds us, I at least think, of the work to be done. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
No.
Absolutely. And it's so interesting that you brought up the quote-unquote angry black woman because from the time that, for as long as I can remember, my mother has always said to me, Moet, you have two strikes against you. You are black and you are a woman. So not only do you have to work twice as hard, you have to work three times as hard. You have to watch what you say. You have to watch how you act. You have to watch how you react to what someone else has said to you. Mm-hmm. So then every day as a black woman, you have to think, how am I going to step into the situation? Mm-hmm. And what do I expect out of the situation? You have to second guess every step that you make and every decision that you make and anything that comes out of your mouth. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. It's hard.
And that's as a woman in her mid-20s in 2018. And, I mean, Reese was in her 20s, you know, back in the 40s and had to deal with this, had to deal with, you know, the
segregation.
The
had to deal with.
So...
oppression.
Like I said, I do think that it's just a lot of educating need to go on.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry to cut you off.
You're good.
But it's and I was so happy that you brought Allie. I was so happy that you brought up earlier. I can't wait to see the reaction in the crowd during Black Cinema Series. Mm-hmm. And I want to say that for so many of our films that we've shown, the crowd's reactions and their thoughts have been so interesting that sometimes you get a very intense silence, or you'll get anger, mm-hmm. you'll get tears, you'll get curiosity for Move, which was about the local Genesee Street shooting at the Boys and Girls Club. There were so many emotions coming out during that film and afterward. Mm-hmm. So it's just interesting to see how us just playing a film and thinking about who can we bring in to talk about this really affects what someone's going to do after that film.
Mm-hmm. I think also, Evan and I were the two guys in the room. One of the things that... I think both of us can also appreciate is this whole movement to educate men. If you look at over on Gregg Street and South Clinton, there's a big billboard that's out up there now about sexual harassment. And basically, I can't remember the whole script, but it's like the guy saying something like, I saw her standing there, and you think that it may be going, you know, toward the negative, but then he says something like, and then I walked over and told the guys that were harassing her, leave her alone. Now, I don't know who put the billboard up, but it catches your attention. It's placed in a prominent place. I think Allie can also talk about, you know, if we're talking about rape in general, about some of the rape myths that are out there that still pervade society now, you know, from everywhere, everything from, well, she was dressed that way, you know. So maybe Allie can talk about that.
Yeah, this film has a number of very interesting conversations around men, and I'm grateful that one of our stand-up guys will be on the panel that night to talk about it.
Jack, thank you.
Yeah, Jack Brennick. And we... thinking about what's happening in the world today and how do we engage men and partner with men, you know, the vast majority of men don't support the notion that rape or sexual assault or harassment is okay. I hear a lot from men saying, all right, why am I now all of a sudden the bad guy? Because I don't support this and I want to be part of the solution. And how do I do it? Men also need to know how to act. It's not okay for a guy to say, just listen. Mm-hmm. It's really hard for men to accept that that's all they need to do right now. So we want to equip men with tools. We want to give them ways to have conversations and learn how to listen to the women in their life, because the women in their life will give them cues. They will give them information on how to respond and what we need from them.
Can I ask how you felt listening to that clip of Larry Smith, the Alabama historian?
Oh, infuriated. I saw, as soon as it came up, I was watching and I said, I know exactly what this guy is going to say. Mm-hmm. It sounds remarkably similar to how almost any rape victim even today is responded to. And if you look at these claims that are coming forward, you think about Ray Moore. That was the first thing I thought of, too. So I thought it was interesting you brought that up. But the importance of being able to hear victims, to be able to acknowledge them and not discredit them, not to label this as an incident or this was alleged. And that's such defensive mm-hmm. language and behavior, and it minimizes the situation. When they're in, for this man in particular, he'd heard everything that went on. I mean, mm-hmm. he lived through it, and just it's to hear the young men in the film talk about, several of them talked about how what they did and exactly how it went. And it's stunning.
When you talk about the young men in the film, there's another film that I think people should check out that came out around 2011 called The Bro Code, How Contemporary
yes,
Society is Making Men Sexist. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you just think of, you know, these movies that are out that show men, some of them kind of, you know, just objectifying mm-hmm. women, and that's mm-hmm. where all that comes from.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Let me get a couple of phone calls. We've got the phone lighting up here. This is Tracy in Rochester. Go ahead, Tracy.
I just want to say thank you for bringing light to my family member's situation, Ms. Reese Taylor. But I want to say also that you would not be having the conversation right now without the efforts of her brother, Mr. Mm-hmm. Robert Corbett, who for more than 60 years asked for a simple apology. Mm-hmm. The family never wanted money. We never asked for money. The only thing he did on her behalf was ask for an apology. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to state that today, and that for the older members of my family who are still experiencing trauma, my mother, her grandchildren, and other relatives who still live in Abbeville, it's a very traumatic situation. It's not one that we talk about. It's not attention that we seek. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to acknowledge Mr. Robert Corbett's efforts in bringing light to Ms. Reese's story. So thank you for talking about it today.
Yeah. Tracy, can you hang on the line for 1 second?
Yes, please.
Can you stay there for just a second? I saw you react emoji. Anything you want to say?
Yes, because to know that you are here in Rochester really is something that we want to make sure we bring you in on our screening. We want to see you there.
Yes.
We want to see you a part of the action, the conversation. So we hope that we can get your information.
And maybe you would come out to our screening that we're going to have next Friday.
Yes.
We would love to have you there.
Even if I can get coffee with you, I'd be happy.
Like, yes.
whatever we can get, I'm all for.
Tracy, do you mind if I put you on hold? Can you jump on with our producer? And is that something that you're comfortable with?
Honestly, it's not something that I'm comfortable with. I know my mother definitely is not comfortable with mm-hmm. it, but I just wanted to state that if it were not for Ms. Reese's brother, Mr. Robert Corbett, we wouldn't be having this conversation today. Ms. Reese was not angry. She was not bitter. We could not make the funeral to Abbeville, but she lived a full life. She was a loving woman, and the situation happened to her, but she did not let that define her. And mm-hmm. Mr. Roberts sent an obituary to me from the funeral. And the only thing that was touched on about what happened was just a simple photo of Ms. Parks. And that was it. It was no mention of what happened to her mm-hmm. or anything. It just talked about her life the things that she enjoyed, mm-hmm. And that's it. So just know she lived a full life. She overcame what the seven men did to her. And we don't say six, we say seven, mm-hmm. because it was seven men involved.
That's right.
You don't get off because you didn't participate, mm-hmm. quote unquote. Mm-hmm. Quote unquote. So that's all I really wanted to say. Evan, my mother spoke in detail about the situation with Carla at Claire when she worked there, did a long form interview. So if you ever want to reference that, but that's all I wanted to say. And I know she wouldn't talk about it now. People have asked her and she will not talk about it. Mm-hmm. It's still traumatic for her because she remembers everything that happened during that time.
Tracy, I think everyone understands. Mm-hmm. And we just want to send our respect and love to your family and thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Yes,
ma'am. Have a great day.
Thank
bye-bye.
You too. Thank you, Tracy. A powerful moment there.
Yes.
Look what your work is doing in the Black Cinema series. I mean, it's just the voices in this community. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people learning and really feeling this hour, a story that many of us had missed for too many decades. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Tracy. I've got a little bit of time. I've got Sam on line two. Let me get this phone call. Go ahead, Sam.
Thank you for taking my call, Evan. I wanted to know, do any of you guys know Lena Baker?
No, sir.
You don't know Lena Baker? She was the first African-American woman executed in Georgia.
Mm. Yes.
And she did the reverse.
Self-defense.
Right. She was working as a maid for the guy.
Yep.
And he came in and he tried to rape her, and she said no. And they were struggling over a gun, and she shot him and killed him.
Yep.
And the only reason they electrocuted her was because in that time they couldn't let her get away with killing a black guy because they was afraid that it would send the wrong message.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 19, she was born in 1900 too.
Mm.
And she died March 5th, 1945, but that was just a story that happened in reverse. And the gentleman was talking about demasculining African American men because mm-hmm. they had to stand by and couldn't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still doing the same thing in the 20th century. Mm-hmm. Look how many was killed last year. And nothing was done about it. And look at the film that they just showed where a guy was just walking across the street and the officer decided to beat him up, and then he lost his job. All he lost was his job, but then the guy got to go back out in the street.
Mm-hmm.
So really, has anything changed since all of this happened? All they did was modernize from just doing it outright. They modernized it. They put it in the court system, and the court system give you the same result. So to me, and let me just say, I'm from the South. I'm 68 years old. I was there when things like this happened. And when I hear something like this, it's like having a scab on a sore that's almost healed. Mm-hmm. And then when you hear something like this and you begin to pull the scab back off the sore
mm-hmm.
and open the wound up again.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, it's a hurtful thing.
Yes,
to have that kind of thing in your remembrance and knowing that if you'd have did something or tried to do something, your life would have been taken and nobody would have thought anything about it because you was the wrong color at the wrong time. But it just bothers me that things like this happened and went on and there was no justice for it for the people. And they have to take things like this to their grave.
Mm.
Look, I know some things have changed, but it's still happening in our society today. It's still happening in our society today.
Yes.
And there's still not enough being done about it to deter people from doing it. And even when people, even just any woman get raped, now they got to go in court and prove, they got to go in court and prove that they weren't the ones who caused this to happen. So what is changed?
Sam, thank you for the phone call, and we're down to our last minute or so just Erica, some thoughts on what you heard from Sam there?
I totally agree with you saying that it's still happening today. I think about how, you know, the black woman, when she was being taken away from the family, or when the black man was being taken away from the family back during slavery, and it's still happening today. Families are being broken with the black man being incarcerated, you know, so it's definitely still a way of like people are still, there's still no justice being served. But I think that the efforts that are being put into it, it's more efforts being put into it. So we may not see it in our lifetime, but we pray and wish for the day of it, you know, of it being a justice.
All right, so it's going to be a powerful evening next two Fridays from now. It's 10 days from now at the Little Theater, 7 p.m. for the screening of the documentary The Rape of Recy Taylor, followed by the panel discussion put on by the Black Cinema Series at the Little. And that's thanks to the Rochester Association of Black Journalists. Jump online at thelittle.org. Get tickets now. Don't wait. Don't show up at the door and have a sold-out show and you can't get in. So you might as well get tickets now. Allison O'Malley, CEO of Resolve, if people want to have resources for supporting victims and understanding what's going on, resources in town. Real quick, where to go?
www.resolve-roc.org.
Resolve-roc.org. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
From the Rochester Association of Black Journalists, you heard Erica Wilson from WHEC-TV, Moet James from right here at WXXI, Kevin Hicks. Thanks to all of you for the work you're doing. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.